Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. Are you a tester that wants to get started with Selenium using C#? Or are you an automation engineer and want to learn more about page objects or how to run your test in parallel? Well, in this episode, Nikolai Edvladkin, founder of Ultimate QA and the number one Selenium WebDriver instructor in the world, as rated by Udemy.com, shares with us some tips and tricks around all these topics and much more taken from his popular video courses on test automation. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Nikolai. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, Joe. Thanks a lot for having me here.
It's great to finally have you on the show. You really rocked it with your session at Automation Guild. So I thought, hey, let's get him on Test Talks. The people really seem to resonate with what you were sharing. So today, I'd like to talk about your experience with test automation in your Selenium courses on ultimateqa.com. But before we get into it, could you just tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, of course. My name is Nikolai. I actually say my name because I know that it's spelled weird. It's actually spelled Nikolai. So I like to say it out loud so that people know how it's spelled. Unfortunately, I didn't have a choice when I was, you know, getting my name spelled. So don't blame me for that confusion. I do work as a test automation lead right now, helping to automate web applications. Right now, my tool of choice is Selenium WebDriver for GUI automation. However, I have tons of experience doing automated testing with a bunch of other tools, QTP, UFT, testing RESTful services, and a bunch of other random tools and layers. I definitely strongly believe in testing the application from all levels. If you can't tell, I'm pretty passionate about doing test automation, just like you, Joe. And I do that from 9 to 5, but then also in my spare time, I do run my own blog, ultimateqa.com. And maybe about 5 years ago, I started my blog just because I was having a really tough time navigating the web and trying to figure out, you know, where the good tools are and how to do test automation better. So that's why I started my blog, so I can help others learn from my experience and hopefully they can stumble across it and then, overcome a gap that may be missing whenever they're trying to figure out some problem.
Awesome. And that's what I love about your site. You offer a lot of content there, and it's not only paid content, but there's also a lot of free content. For example, I think you have a free course on Selenium WebDriver, and you go over, you know, what is Selenium WebDriver, and it's a free video, and it's awesome. So I guess that's the first thing I like to start with. One of the things you cover in that is what is an implicit versus an explicit weight, and what are the problems that can occur as a result of using improper synchronization. So could you just dive into a little bit why the weight mechanism you use in your Selenium test is so important?
Yeah, definitely. First, I just wanted to piggyback off your comment about my courses. I definitely try to make most of them free. I'm doing my best there. Some of them I do charge just because I got to pay the bills for the web hosting, which can get a little bit pricey. But other than that, I do my best to give all the content for free just for everybody to learn. In regards to the Selenium synchronization course, I think it's really critical to have proper synchronization techniques in your automated functional tests. I think that's one of the main issues that a lot of us experience flakiness in our test automation is because the web is just getting more complicated these days. If you guys saw my presentation from the Automation Guild, I mentioned why the web is getting more complicated, but obviously the web is attempting to provide the end user a better experience. So with that come things like AJAX that allow the application to load asynchronously. We start using things like AngularJS so that the application loads faster, the user doesn't have to wait as long, and it's an overall better experience for the end user. But for us on the test automation side, it becomes much harder because we have to deal with all of those moving parts. And so having proper synchronization throughout your tests will allow you to properly deal with all of those moving parts, providing you with a stable test so that you can actually receive proper results whenever your test fails or whenever it passes.
Awesome. I noticed there was a bullet that you have bullets listed out what's being covered in your video. And one of them is default weight. For the folks that don't know, what is a default weight?
Oh, yeah, sure. So the Selenium WebDriver C sharp bindings are a little bit different than the Java bindings. Not totally different. They're just different naming conventions of classes. So in the Java bindings, you have the expected, the WebDriver weight class, and the WebDriver weight class inherits from some class. However, in C sharp, the WebDriver weight class inherits from a default weight class. That's just a different naming convention. And so the default weight, basically the parent of the WebDriver weight class, and it allows you to customize the attributes of your WebDriver weight class. So for example, if you're creating a new WebDriver weight class, you're automatically going to get some default properties with that WebDriver weight, like the polling interval, which is going to be half a second. And then whenever the WebDriver weight fails, you're going to get an error message stating that the element is not visible. However, if you wanted to modify those, for example, increase your polling interval, maybe you wanted to have a polling interval of every 2 seconds because you know that your application is slow and there's an element that loads very slowly. So maybe instead of polling every half a second, you want to be polling every 2 seconds. Or maybe you want to change the message that comes back whenever the WebDriver wait fails. So rather than getting no such element exception, you can, get a different message that says, oh, element ABC did not load within 60 seconds. So that's why the test failed. So that's a default wait. It basically allows you to customize the properties of the WebDriver weight of the WebDriver weight class.
Now I know you seem to use the C sharp Selenium bindings most often. What I've seen, are there any other differences that you've noticed between the C sharp binding and some of the other bindings?
So I am no expert in the Selenium WebDriver Java bindings. I've seen it and played with it a little bit. But the main difference that I know is the default weight class that extends the WebDriver weight class. The other differences that I've noticed with the C sharp bindings is they tend to use a lot more interfaces in the Selenium C sharp binding. So for example, I think in the Java bindings, a web element is of a type web element. However, in the C-sharp bindings, they are iWeb elements. So they're an interface as opposed to an actual concrete type like they are in Java.
So like I mentioned, you have multiple courses. You have another free course, and this one's on fast test execution in Sauce Labs and Browser Stack. Now, we all know Sauce Labs is the best, but any tips on how to create our tests from the beginning that will make running them in parallel execution easier if we start from the beginning thinking about parallel execution?
Yes, there are definitely tips for that. I can talk in regards to the C-sharp environment, for example. So if you start from beginning to try and use Visual Studio Test, which is a testing framework, similar to JUnit or whatever you guys use in Java, it does not actually allow you to run tests in parallel. And if it does, it's maybe now the latest versions, they just came out with 2017. Maybe that does it, but it's probably in a very complicated manner. So rather than starting with Visual Studio Test, you can use NUnit. NUnit is another unit testing framework and is very popular. And you can use a parallelizable attribute on top of those tests to make your tests parallelizable. Now, the caveat with NUnit is that it can run tests in parallel, but it doesn't run them in parallel on the methods. It runs them on parallel at the class level. Therefore, if you have, for example, let's say two tests inside of a class, those tests are not going to run in parallel, even if you tag the class as parallelizable. They're going to run sequentially. So what you have to do is basically start thinking how you can split up your tests in such a manner that you have many classes, and then those classes can now run in parallel. What I do at my work is I usually make the classes equivalent to a PBI. And so within a PBI, there can be, you know, multiple tests that validate that PBI. And so usually it comes out to maybe 5 to 10 tests within a class. And so I can have many classes. And then all of those classes, they will be able to run in parallel. And then they'll just iterate through each of the methods. And so if you're thinking about it that way, just preparing yourself to run your tests in parallel, you won't have any issues, because I wouldn't say start doing that from the beginning. I would say just begin to write your tests. Don't do premature optimization. Just begin to write your tests. And at some point, your tests are going to take a really long time to run, like hours upon hours, and it's going to become unacceptable to you. So at that point, when it becomes unacceptable, all you have to do is put on the parallelizable attribute. You'll definitely have to do a little bit of playing around with Sauce Labs to get it configured. It's not so hard, but it's a little. There are a few little nuances for that. And once you hook it up to Sauce Labs or Browser Stack, those are two options. But like you said, Joe, Sauce Labs is definitely better. then you'll be able to run them in Sauce Labs without many issues. The other thing that you might run into when you're starting to do running your tests in parallel is managing data. A lot of times as we're going through our tests, we're not thinking about managing data in multiple threads. But when you begin to run your tests in parallel, you have to start figuring out how you can manage your data, because it's going to be utilized in multiple threads because the tests are running in parallel.
Awesome. So do you actually have any tips or strategies that you use for data management? I find that as one of the biggest causes of issues when people start running in parallel.
Yeah, I'm definitely there with you. I think it's also a big problem for many people managing data as you run tests in parallel. I think one of the best things that I figured out that can help you manage data, whether in parallel or with test automation in general, even like sequentially, is to be able to create and tear down your own test data. If, for example, you have an API where you can, you know, let's say a common scenario, a lot of people, you know, have users that they want to do stuff with. So if you can create your own test user and then utilize that test user for your test and then tear him down at the end of the test, that has been the most successful thing for me when it comes to test automation, because it basically gives you full control of that user. And at the end of the day, you're actually not affecting anybody else, because a lot of people try to create batches of users and then utilize the users from those batches. But then you may forget that one test left the user in a different state than before. So now that can like lead to weird behaviors inside of your tests. So I believe that the best strategy is creating and tearing down the test data for each and every situation where you need that test data.
One of my most popular posts is using Selenium with C#, and I don't know why. So I'm always on the lookout for resources, because people always contact me and say, hey, how can I learn how to use Selenium? So you actually have a free course on C# for QA automation engineers. What does this course cover? Does someone need to know programming, or does it cover automation, or what is that course all about?
Yeah, so that course is actually I hope that the name can explain what the course says, but it is literally C# for automation engineers. So basically, you start from scratch without any knowledge, and that course is going to teach you how to, you know, install all of the appropriate tools. It's going to teach you all the basics of programming, all the basics, you know, variables and methods and classes and all that. It's going to get into object-oriented programming, cover that in a good amount of detail. And then at the end, it's actually even going to show you an example of Selenium WebDriver, a framework, and then how all of the stuff that the students learned using C Sharp fits in to Selenium WebDriver and the little framework that's there at the end. So no knowledge required. It takes you from A to Z. And I kind of like it because it doesn't cover everything like, you know, like a C Sharp book would, or like a Java book that would take you through, you know, A to Z of the entire language. But sometimes as automation engineers, just to get started, you don't need to know everything. You don't need to know the complexities of inheritance and generics, and you don't need to know like patterns. I think they're good to know later on. But if you're looking to get started, then you don't need as much knowledge. And so this course is kind of aimed to do that. Just enough knowledge to get you started and comfortable, but you'll definitely need to learn more in the future if you want to progress your skills.
Awesome. Yeah, I just love that approach. It gives people just enough information to get started. And once people get started, then that's when they realize, oh, I may need to learn this or that, but they're not held back because they don't know it. This gives them enough information where they can get started and be productive. And that's why I love these types of resources. And once again, it's free. So if anyone's familiar with Alan Richardson's Java for Testers, a lot of people ask me, well, how about for C Sharp? Well, this is a resource you can use to get up to speed with C Sharp and just learn what you need as an automation engineer and not all the other stuff that a developer needs to know. So I'll have that in the show notes to check that out. Definitely check out that video course. Nikolai, also, like I said, a lot of your stuff is free, but you also have more premium content. And one of them is on page objects and test automation. Now, you were part of the guild this year, and one of the interesting things that came up about page object was this new idea called a screenplay pattern. And you actually wrote a really cool comment on my post on this. So I'm just curious to know your initial thoughts on using a screenplay pattern instead of page objects.
Yeah, I'm so glad you got into this topic. I definitely wanted to talk to you about it. So yeah, after the Automation Guild, you brought up, or I guess some person brought up that question about the screenplay pattern. And I was like, oh, wow, sounds interesting. You know, so I definitely went back and watched John Smart's presentation on the screenplay pattern. And it definitely seems very interesting. It seems like the framework that he's utilizing provides so much functionality out of the box. And that seems fantastic. And I definitely love the reporting that is automatically created from all of that. It seems to make sense from a perspective, right? You have a user, or you have an actor that performs certain actions on an application. I definitely want to dive into more into the screenplay pattern, because I'm still a little bit confused as to how the screenplay pattern differs from doing something like behavior-driven development with your test automation. Because in my point of view, behavior-driven development of test automation, the purpose was to represent the end user behavior and to have your tests be structured in business-like logic, right? Using the Gherkin syntax. Given a user can log in, when the user, you know, given the user opens the page, when a user logs in, then he can, you know, see the Automation Guild icon at the top of the page. So to me, that already is kind of representative of the screenplay pattern, even though it's in different terms. So I'm not really certain what the screenplay pattern adds to that use case, because to me, it sounded like the screenplay pattern was to have business-friendly test cases. And then to me, behavior-driven development is already business-friendly test cases. So I'm not really sure how that enhances it. But again, that could be just me being naive and not fully understanding everything. But I definitely want to look into more into it just to be able to better understand everything.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm thinking of doing just refactoring some of my code to see and compare what the differences are. I know John Smart himself said that the end code itself, once it's done, it makes it more maintainable and more readable. So you don't have these huge page objects. I don't know if your teams do this, but my teams usually stuff these page objects. They're doing it wrong, but they end up having these monster page objects. And if you, I guess, use the screenplay pattern, it makes you break it up to begin with. And so it's less stuff to maintain and makes it more readable. I think that's the thing. And he says it's faster. So I'd like to try it myself, though. A lot of people are, like you said, intrigued by it, but I think we need to try it more to see how it works.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely feel your pain on the large page objects as well. I've seen them get very hefty. The page object and test automation course, it helps to deal with that problem, because I think once you begin to develop page objects and you've got a good solid foundation of it, that's exactly the problem that you're going to run into, is they're going to get huge and you're going to be like, man, this is so hard to maintain. So I actually show a technique in the course, and that technique is basically you just begin to abstract out all the little different parts of a page. So for example, if you know, like open up, Facebook, you can break up the Facebook page into multiple classes. Like you can have, you know, the center panel, you can have the left sidebar, you can have the right sidebar, you can have the top toolbar, and you can break it up into the classes. And then your main page can just utilize those classes to get to it. So for example, if you were writing a test, you could do something like, you know, Facebook page dot right sidebar dot, you know, click the like button or something like that, instead of saying, you know, Facebook page dot click like button on the right sidebar. So that can definitely make your page object smaller. Now, as I'm doing that technique, all our page, actually, we have a code review metrics, and my rule for our classes is that they can be no longer than 150 lines. So almost none of our classes are longer than 150 lines of code.
Awesome. So there's a few things I love about what you just mentioned. So I think sometimes people hear page object and they think it literally needs to be a page. I have an application. It's basically one huge page. But yeah, like you said, break it out into sections. It doesn't have to be the whole page just because it's called a page object. So that's a great point. Number two, I love that you're doing code reviews. Are there any other metrics you use for your code reviews with your automation code that you found useful?
Yeah, it's really funny because I've read, you know, a lot of books and a lot of articles and watched a lot of videos on test automation, but I feel like the most impactful book that I've read that's helped me improve my test automation was Clean Code by Bob Martin. In there, he just basically outlines a bunch of principles that he believes in, that, you know, he's gathered through experience, that have helped him to have clean code. And he brings excellent arguments for all of his points. And so I try to enforce at least a bunch of the main points from that book. For example, like he says, you know, a class should only do one thing. So that's, you know, where something like a page object pattern comes in handy, because it, you know, does a single thing. So that's one of the rules, is classes can only do one thing. Same thing with a method, actually. A method should only do one thing. He says that methods should be no longer than like 10 or 15 lines of code. And it's really cool, because if you start refactoring your methods and making them really small, your code is going to read so nicely, because whenever you come to a method and the method says something like, you know, open page, or the method says navigate to a URL, and then you open up that method and it does only that, like two or three lines long, the code becomes really clean and really nice and really easy to read. Some other metrics that we like to use, yeah, really small methods, really small classes. One other interesting point that he brought up is, for example, like a try-catch block. I know that a lot of us like to utilize try-catch blocks, especially with GUI automation. Whenever something goes wrong, we can catch an error and then handle it. A try-catch block, by definition, does two things, right? Because you're trying something, and then when that fails, you're doing something else. So that breaks the initial rule that says a method should only do one thing. So all the try-catch blocks should be wrapped in their own method that says something like, you know, try to click a button, or try to, you know, navigate to this image, or something like that. And we just have like naming conventions for classes, naming conventions for methods.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a great resource. And if people have a Safari book subscription, like I do, I'm a bibliomaniac. So in Safari Books, they actually have Clean Code, the video series. So if you don't feel like reading, you can actually watch Uncle Bob go through all these principles. And it's exactly like Nikolai mentioned. It's a wealth of information. He talks about code, but since automation is code, it would apply to what you're doing. And I think it's a great resource. So Nikolai, do you actually cover any of this information within your your gold course or your premier course, the one on complete Selenium WebDriver with C Sharp. What's covered in that particular course?
So that is my main course that I try to use. It's basically a course that helps anyone that's interested in learning test automation with Selenium WebDriver to learn everything from the beginning to the end, and at the end of it, to have a test automation framework that's running and working, you know, for whatever purpose you need. Because it's so interesting, because in all my years of doing this, I've never found any course that really, I found that one or two, let's say, but I found one or two courses that teach you how to create a test automation framework. But most other courses, they kind of teach you, this is what Selenium WebDriver is. You know, this is how to use it. And then they write these really bad tests that are not maintainable and not stable. And so at the end, you take the course, you learn what Selenium WebDriver is, you know how to write a test, but you know how to write a really bad test. And so whenever it's time to take that into your workplace, your automation becomes really brittle and really unstable. So I try to take it a level further where I actually teach you how to get to the end, you know, say, yeah, now you know what Selenium WebDriver is. Now you know how to write a test. Now let's do it the correct way. Let's write a framework that uses the page object model so that your tests are maintainable, so that your tests can read really well, and so that they read in plain English, so that, you know, no locators are exposed in your tests. Everything is abstracted out appropriately to the appropriate page. And now you just apply it to whatever application you want, and you should be able to repeat the same process. So it basically covers C# from A to Z, and then it teaches Selenium WebDriver, and then it teaches how to create a framework. I want to expand the course a little bit, because I do want to add some maybe best practices to there. Like I mentioned, like code reviews, some maybe limiting your classes to, you know, certain sizes, maybe teaching something like NUnit. A lot of people are asking me to expand on some things like NUnit and maybe a reporting framework in there. So I think I want to add that to there just to make it even more complete. But I feel like at some point I have to stop, because the course is already like 30 hours long of just video. And you can, I think you can keep expanding on technologies forever. Yeah. There's so many technologies, so I don't want to make it too large so that, you know, people will never finish learning. Maybe I'll just make it separate courses as well.
Awesome. I highly recommend you check out ultimateqa.com. And like I said, there's a lot of courses there that are free. So check them out. See how what Nikolai's teaching style is. I really like it. And then if it's something you're interested in, I would highly recommend investing in. It's a small investment in that course. And you'll learn, like you said, A to Z, how to do Selenium automation with C#, which is a topic I don't find much information on the web to begin with anyway. If you're using Java, you probably can cobble together some Google Docs. But with C#, I think it's a little harder. Okay, Nikolai, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give us to improve our test automation efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
Joe. So like I said, I always listen to your test talks. So I knew this question would come up. So I've been thinking about it over the past few days. What's the one piece of actionable advice that I can give to all of you guys? At least in my point of view, I think the thing that has helped me the most in my career and has given me the most bang for my buck was to never stop learning. Regardless of, you know, what it is, whatever field you're in, I think it's really important to always take a little bit of time out of your day to learn something new. Not just learning, you know, on your 9-to-5 job, but to, you know, maybe take half an hour, maybe an hour out of your day to just improve your skills even further. I think there are so many benefits to this. I can give you guys a few examples. First, if you're constantly improving your skills, you're always going to have job options, right? Because you're always staying up to date on the latest technologies. Therefore, whenever it's time for you to re-enter the field, the market will take you on because you'll have the skills that are the market desires. I've seen that in the past. It actually sucks and it makes me feel bad. I've seen it in the past where I've entered a job and there would be individuals that are using like very outdated technologies, very outdated skills for the application, for testing the application. We actually had one guy, he was working for like a year testing the application and he couldn't get a single test going. This was for many reasons, but mainly it came down to the fact that he was trying to use QTP on a tablet and it was basically impossible. So I actually had to end up teaching him Selenium WebDriver and some programming. And then finally he was able to get up to speed. But can you imagine if his boss wasn't a cool guy and he decided to lay him off and say, hey, you've been here for a year. You didn't do anything. It's time for you to go. He would have reentered the job market with very outdated skills. And then I'm not sure, you know, whether he would have been able to get another job or not. So to me, that's a scenario that I think most people don't want to face. So if you're constantly learning and constantly growing, you probably don't have to face that scenario and you'll be able to, you know, enter the job market. You'll be very comfortable. You'll have lots of job options and you'll also just be really good at your job and you'll probably enjoy it because learning, at least in my opinion, is cool and very enjoyable. Best way to find or contact me, of course, Joe mentioned it a lot of times, and thanks a lot for mentioning it, Joe. I got my blog, ultimateqa.com. All my courses are at courses.ultimateqa.com. And then Twitter is where I, you know, do a lot of posting or interact with a lot of people. And my Twitter handle is Nikolai_A00.
Thank you, Nikolai, for your Selenium automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/143. And while you're there, make sure to click on the free trial button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Lab's awesome products and services. And the Automation Guild this year was a huge success, and I got so many demands that I decided, since everything has been pre-recorded, that I would keep registration open. So you missed the live aspect of the conference, but you still get all the automation goodness that went on during the week and all the pre-recorded sessions that all the speakers created. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, Nikolai actually has a session in the Automation Guild called Using the Page Object Pattern to Drastically Stabilize Your Automation. It's about an hour and 20 minutes long. It's like a mini video course itself. And he goes in hands-on and shows an example of how to get started using the page object pattern. That alone is worth the price of admission. So check that out at automationguild.com. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.